Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee for February 17th, 2025. First item on the agenda, we'll call the meeting to order, and we need an approval of the minutes. Vice Chair Myers, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes of February 12th, 2025?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes.
Vice Chair Myers moves the minutes of February 12th, 2025. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, questions? The minutes are approved. Got a few different bills today, and the authors are across the hall in their committee assignments, so we're going to have to juggle back and forth a little bit. Representative Spencer Mira, welcome to the committee in person. Would you mind introducing yourself and your junior member with us?
Yeah, happy to be here. Representative Samantha Sensomura. I represent District 63A, which is a portion of South Minneapolis, a returning member to the
Transportation. Do you want to flip the mic?
I think it's on. I don't know if I just need to sit closer. Returning member to the Transportation Committee, and this is my daughter, Yuna, who's going to be joining committee sometimes.
Again, congratulations, and we're glad you're here with us in person.
Thank you.
So we have our first author. Catch your breath. But we're just getting started. I know you've got committee across the hall as well, so what our intention is to kind of introduce the first airport bill that you have and then the second bill. And if you need to go back, we're laying these bills over. So if you need to get back to your committee, we'll wrap it up for you after the introduction. But the first bill up, we will have House File 198. So I will, this is just for informational purposes. There's no motion necessary. Representative Zalesnikar, and I think you've got a couple testifiers online, so somebody smarter than me and more capable is going to figure out the technology. But if you could introduce your bill, I would love to hear about it.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick and members. House File 198 is the air traffic control tower for the Duluth International Airport. This tower is 70 years old, the third oldest tower in the nation. And this is an important bill because there's federal funding that's available under the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, and the window for funding is going to close in the next year. So this is an opportunity for Duluth to leverage federal money of $54.7 million with a $14 million investment and bring this tower into the safety standards that we need. So the airport serves the community, and more than the community, it serves Cirrus is the number one manufacturer of piston aircraft in the world. And the 148th unit is there, which is important for our economic and our national security interests. This tower will serve many of those agencies. And in addition, United is there, Delta is there, Southwest is there, and we have Lake Superior helicopters that also use this airport. So the ask is $14 million, like I said, to leverage millions of the federal money that will be disappearing rather quickly. So it needs to be timely for the members to consider this. This airport serves 14 airports in Minnesota, 5 airports in Wisconsin, and oversees the various weather systems that happen when you have four seasons in Minnesota and certainly northern Minnesota. Bless you. And thank you. I'm going to call on our testifiers, Chair Kosnick.
I believe we have two testifiers, Mark Popko and Dante Tomasoni. We'll start with Mr. Popko, please, if you can hear us.
Yep. Can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you. If you could introduce yourself, identify your association, and proceed with your testimony, please.
Absolutely. Mark Popko, Duluth Airport Authority, Director of Operations. And thank you all for hearing us today. Representative Zalesnikar, thank you for introducing the bill, and I appreciate all the others that are appreciating that bipartisan support, Representative Kozlowski, Representative Scraba, and Representative Johnson. This truly is a project that is not only for Duluth International Airport. It is that regional aspect that Representative Zalesnikar touched on. The Northeast region of the United of Minnesota truly benefits from this, not only that local region of Duluth. So I wanted to hit on a couple of points. One thing that it might be beneficial to understand is the economic impact that the Duluth International Airport has. So in 2019, our economic impact was in the neighborhood of $760 million. We're just finalizing and getting ready to publish a new updated economic impact statement. And that economic input that the Duluth International Airport itself holds is $1.4 billion to the region. So the economic catalyst that the region has, and the air traffic control tower being a critical and really central function to that, needs to get replaced. We already spoke to the regionality of the project, and I don't think we need to go any further than that. I will touch on one last thing, and that's the federal funding aspect of it. So we are asking for $14 million. We already have $16 million of federal funding secured and in hand, ready to get put to work. That $14 million in combination with the additional funding that we expect to get in the next federal fiscal year is what's going to round out that project and allow us to put a shovel in the ground starting in the spring of 2026. While we are at risk of potentially losing future federal funding if we don't take action this year in the state legislative session, we're also at risk of turning back funding. So like I said, we've received $16 million of funding. That funding, it won't get put to work without a state match to it and allow us to put together a good unit of work. So it's to put it into perspective, our current air traffic control tower, while being the third oldest and 70 years old, sits at about 42 feet tall. The new tower will sit at 153 feet tall. So to give you an example of the difference in level of safety, we don't meet any line of sight characteristics or any safety measure by measured in today's world. So it's a great project. It's a non-controversial one and one that we need to push forward. The time is now because we're going to start seeing consequences if we don't. So I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Papko. We will hold off on questions until the rest of the testifiers. Next, we have Mr. Dante Tomasoni. If you can hear us, introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
I can hear you fine. How's the audio in there?
Great. Please proceed.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dante Tomasoni, Director of Corporate Affairs at Cirrus Aircraft. I'm here to support House File 198. As Representative Zalesnikar stated, Cirrus Aircraft is the company I represent. We are the number one manufacturer of personal aviation aircraft in the world. The only company, in fact, that produced more airplanes than Cirrus last year was Airbus. We currently have 10,000 Cirrus piston planes out in the world and 500 Vision jets, and we are producing at an average of 700 aircraft a year. Right out of Duluth, Minnesota. And we're going to continue to do so as long as demand dictates. And right now we have a 3-year wait list for our aircraft. Now each and every airplane is built, manufactured, and must be flown before it is delivered to its owner. And in addition to manufacture and test, we also run flight training, testing. We do our innovation for new ideas in the planes and service of the use of our used aircraft as well. And that's all done at the Duluth Airport. Our latest estimate is Cirrus alone, and this doesn't count the rest of the stats that you have on the takeoffs and landings at DAA. We did 16,000 takeoffs and landings at DAA. And at Cirrus, our number one priority is safety. The tower controls everything a pilot needs to do to remain safe. It controls the air traffic, so there are no mid-air collisions. It advises pilots of weather conditions and all safety considerations when taking off and landing. And that all comes from that tower and from the airport control. The tower is in constant communication with every single plane in the air and is an essential part of aviation safety every day. And not only does Cirrus make safety a number one priority, but Duluth Airport Authority makes safety a number one priority. And every single plane and aviator and passenger, safety is the number one priority. And so being the third oldest tower in the U.S., it simply needs to be replaced. You've heard the testimony of Mr. Papko and Representative Zalesnikar on its degrading physical condition and its lack of appropriate technology. For Cirrus and for every plane or pilot and passenger in aviation, that concern is important, and that's why we're speaking in support of House File 198 today. Without the support of Duluth Airport and its commitment to the safety of Cirrus, Cirrus would not be in Minnesota today, and we would not be able to support the 1,700 jobs that we have in Duluth and the continued safe operations coming out of DAA. So I thank you for listening to my testimony today and yield for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tomasoni. Pleasure to have you at our committee. I don't know if there's any member questions. We'll start with Representative Scraba.
I just want to show support for this. Way back when I was a mayor of Ely, Cirrus was building a plant in Duluth. Congressman Oberstar had gotten the city of Ely $2 million for a building, and they sat me down after I went there to testify for it. They said, could you give $500,000 of that up? And I said, for what? They said, we need lights for this new Cirrus company in Duluth, MnDOT does. And I said, how many jobs is it going to bring? Thousands. I go, no problem. You can have it. And I never thought that I would be supporting it again like this. It is a big deal. A lot of those folks that the jobs are in Duluth, but they live in the district, my district. And they also make a lot of the parts. We're different airports are trying to get them to manufacture seats or little parts in other areas and then fly around and get them. So this tower is huge. It's I toured it in Capital Investments 2 years ago. It needs to be replaced. They're manufacturing the parts they need because they don't make them anymore. So it's a big deal. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zalesnikar. So you mentioned that there's some urgency needed for this because of funds in the IIJA that will go away. Is this just them naturally going away? Or are you concerned? Are there some impact from some of these executive orders that seem to be trying to change from the Trump administration that seem to be trying to change that legislation?
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you for the question. And this is just, we've anticipated, we knew this deadline was there. This has nothing to do with any federal executive orders. To my knowledge, it's just, these funds are running out as was determined from the past. And so this is the timeline they've had. It has nothing to do with executive orders, but thank you for the question.
Thank you. Next we have Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I fully support this project. I have friends that fly out of Duluth Airport all the time. They live in Hermantown. But some of the concerns I have, you know, just today, 300 FAA workers were laid off. And so that's a concern. I have a question about the $54 million, and you guys have secured 16 in federal funds. Do you know where they're asking for the rest of it? Because if it's the thing I fear is the discretionary grant side of the IIJA and that being put on pause. And so a lot of these programs are grant programs that are discretionary funding, and any of that discretionary funding going forward is probably not going to happen. So I'm just kind of curious where those federal funds are coming from. And then I'm also kind of curious too about the IIJA match, that $3.3 million. You know, last year we put $200 million into that IIJA match account, and that money's pretty much gone. And so I'm just kind of curious if this $3.3 million is in hand, because otherwise it's, unless we refill that account, it won't be there.
Representative Zalesnikar, you also have, if that's above your pay grade, feel free to testify.
And I will ask. Thank you for the question, and I will defer to
maybe Mr. Papko.
Correct.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. Thanks for the good question. We do have the 3.3 earmarked and secured, so we do have that IIJA match. The minute that program came out, we applied for the full federal dollar amount in that matching funds. So we were able to secure that. In regards to your other question, specifically, it is coming from the fifth year of the bipartisan infrastructure law through the airport terminal program. That is written in a law, so I'm not concerned from an executive order standpoint that won't get funded. And our FAA Airport District Office has been transparent in expecting that funding to come along as well. So although I can't predict the future, I think that it's a fairly low risk to see that fifth and final year of that airport terminal program not be allocated later this year. We expect the notice of funding opportunity to come out in about September, October timeframe, if not earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Papko. Follow-up, Lead Cagle.
Thank you. I was just curious to the testifier if those are discretionary grant programs or if they're formula funding. Just curious about that.
Mr. Papko?
Yep. So that airport terminal program is discretionary funding in nature. So the allocation is up to the FAA administrator at the end of the day. But we, like I said, we expect it to be there, given no indication that it should not be there, because it is part of that bipartisan infrastructure law that's already been written.
Thank you, Mr. Papko. Representative Berg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Zalesnikar, for bringing this bill. I do appreciate a working tower when I go to work every day and make sure I come home in the same way as I left, and I've flown into Duluth Airport for the last 20 years. Delightful area. So I think I'm going to just go to the testifier once again with this question. So we've heard that you're fairly certain that the money is going to be there. But what we've seen out of the Trump-Musk administration is that willy-nilly executive orders go out and funding gets cut with no explanation at any time. What is the plan should the funding not materialize as you expect, as we're seeing that happening at any given point on any given day? What is the plan then when you have partial funding? Just do you have a backup plan should you not get the funding that you expect?
Mr. Papko?
I appreciate another great question. So the short answer is yes, we do have it. That $14 million that we have, or the $14 million that we would get from the state, would be able to leverage that $16 million that we already have in, and we'd complete a phase of the air traffic control tower. So we're able to meet all MMB requirements and react to any dollar amount of funding that comes through. But really, you can imagine it's not easy to phase an air traffic control tower, so that $14 million is critical in order to complete that phase and meeting all of MMB requirements at the same time. So we have contingency plans, across of contingency plans to react to anything. That being said, we're prepared for it all. One of the biggest kind of long poles in the tent is this $14 million to get that initial shovel in the ground and start building that project momentum.
Thank you, Mr. Papko. Representative Vice Chair Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Linskar, for this. I'm going to just echo what Representative Scraba said. When I was on capital investment, we had the chance to go and look at this this project. It was very eye-opening, and I appreciate the testifiers being there. I mean, being in the basement and seeing the water that was down there, the impact it could have on the electrical system, and even how they would share messages. I think that was the place that they had a little tube that they dropped it in, and it went to somebody else. So good bill for much-needed infrastructure up there, so thank you for bringing it.
Thank you very much, Representative Zalesnikar. See, we even have a hard time saying it sometimes. if you closing comments, and then we'll move on to your other bill. This one, appreciate the time of our testifiers and sharing the information with us.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, and thank you to the testifiers from a fabulous part of the state, northeastern Minnesota. This is critical for the region, but it's also critical for the state and for the nation. We have people flying in and out of Duluth as an international airport, and having a tower that is aged to this level, I think it speaks for itself. So I encourage your support, and thank you for the time to present today.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. Just here for informational purposes, I will introduce for you House File 189. We're just laying it over, but please introduce your bill for us, the second bill, okay, and we'll try to get you back to your scheduled committee.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And members, this bill is really a parity bill to the existing gas tax bill that we have for our highways and our bridges. And so what this bill does is we have EV vehicles right now that pay, they're registered and they pay $75 a year. And so what this bill does is really, I just did straight math and looked at the gas tax that was passed, and it's got an inflator on it, but I just took the regular gas tax and then just researched the assumptions on the average miles Minnesotans drive, how many gallons that is. And so looking at that, Minnesotans drive on an average 13,957 miles. So I looked at that math equation, and that's how I got 137. There is a surcharge that was 0.035, so I added that in. And basically, that's why it's 137. I didn't round up. I did exact straight math by the data. So, you know, in the state of Minnesota, we have, you know, all types of vehicles that are using gas and diesel, trucks, vans, SUVs, and cars. And so right now, though, when we're moving to the EV model across the state and the country, our roads and bridges are funded by the gas tax. And so for obvious reasons, you can see that we're not going to have funds going into the road and bridges like we have historically in the past. And that number's shifting. And so that's what this bill is about. Right now, there's 53,356 electric vehicles in the state of Minnesota. And that is what the bill is about.
Thank you, Representative. There is an A1 amendment. That's Representative Kraft. Please introduce your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to be clear, you had said this is an information hearing or this is being laid over?
This bill is being laid over, so we won't be taking a vote on it. The previous bill was not in the committee's jurisdiction, but because right. It had to do with airports, we heard that on an informational
got
purpose.
It. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zalesnikar, so I hope you'll take this as a friendly amendment, because I think there's ways we can work together here. And I hope this can be a good example of how we can do bipartisan work. So I, and I think many in my caucus, have concerns about adding costs to EVs. It is still early in the growth of that market. EVs have far fewer externalities than fossil fuels, meaning they cause far fewer additional bad things like air pollution, the disease like asthma and deaths that it contributes to in Minnesota, and the greenhouse gases that they produce that have to be addressed. I think these are all still excellent arguments as to why we should be careful in raising fees on EVs. And I think you can actually make the case there's a lot of different ways of looking at those numbers, that $75 fee is a reasonable compared to gas tax paid per vehicle. But I do acknowledge they are an increasing part of the vehicles in Minnesota, and we do need to fund our roads and bridges. So the crux of this amendment is that 2 years ago, we passed a critical greenhouse gas vehicle miles traveled policy that will play a big part in helping Minnesota think more holistically about our transportation infrastructure and help us achieve our transportation climate goals, which are net zero emissions by 2050.
Representative Kraft, I hate to interrupt you, but number one, you need to move your amendment. Please explain your amendment. We'll give you time to talk about the bill overall as well.
Mr. Chair, my apologies. I move the A1.
Okay, please explain your amendment.
Thank you. Do I have to start over? Can I continue where I was?
Please pick up where you left off, but speed it up to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So green transportation is our number one source of greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota. So we passed this bill, and we created, based on recommendations from an implementation advisory group last year, an account that could use to hold funds for mitigation of road projects that were increasing our greenhouse gas emissions or vehicle miles traveled in Minnesota. We didn't put any funds in the account, and the law just actually went into effect on February 1st this year. So the amendment that I'm proposing would change slightly some of the fees you're proposing, would reduce the EV fee from 150 to 125, take the plug-in hybrids from 75 to 50, and would remove the fees on motorcycles. I think it's very early there, and I would rather that we kind of pause on that. It would deposit money from these EV fees into this account, and the purpose of this account is to be used to mitigate projects when they need road projects when they need mitigation because they're increasing our greenhouse gas emissions. It then also creates a mechanism to sweep funds from this account back into the highway user tax fund so that if they're not used, they go back into highways, to roads and bridges. So it doesn't take anything away from that. I do suggest changing a little bit on how frequently that these fees are increased. You have something there to increase them per inflation, and I suggest that rather than doing it every year, we do it every 2 years, and we round it to the nearest $5. It just makes it a little bit more efficient to introduce, and you won't have people paying fees that are $127.13 kind of a thing. The other thing that my amendment proposes is that you do have some general fund transfers built into the bill that we talked about, and it eliminates those so that we don't have any general fund impact. So that is my amendment. I hope you view it as friendly. It's some things that, you know, maybe more than I would like to do, but I think this is a way that we could work on this issue together.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would, you know, argue to the committee here that this is not necessarily the most friendly of an amendment. It is nice, though, that we're for the first time talking about how this climate mitigation is going to cost money. I think that an extra $50 is going to be woefully insignificant. I think that when we're talking about building a 65-mile long trail to offset the carbon emissions of a highway repair, I think that's not going to be sufficient to the task that we're having here at hand. So I would argue that, number one, I'm a guy who doesn't really like fees or taxes, regardless of who's paying them. You know, my constituents don't pay your 0.75% sales tax for transit. I also don't like it. I was against it back then. I'll still be against your 0.75% sales tax for transit just because I'm kind of woefully against it. So for Representative Zalesnikar, I'm not really a huge fan of raising anyone's taxes, but when we're talking about a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, electric vehicle, I don't think anyone goes to the dealership and says, you know, I was going to buy an electric vehicle, but that extra $75 a year, that was what got me. I don't think anyone says that. I think what we could look at is the tax title and licensing fees that we discussed previously last year, to the tune of that's going to be about $1,400. So you want to talk about saving people money, let's talk about tab fees. Let's not talk about having a problem with people paying for the roads that they're destroying and saying that people are going to not buy electric vehicles because of $75 extra, because I think they're not going to do it because of a $1,500 tab fee increase that was last year. So I would recommend to the body that we vote no on this amendment and we just go brass tacks. Let's do it with this. Is the purpose of this is not to try and mitigate your climate issues. And I know that we have more to discuss on that issue. Let's talk about the electric vehicles and how much they have to pay to make up for the gas tax that they're not paying.
Representative Kraft, do you want to close your amendment?
Sure, I'd like to ask for a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. Granted.
Well, Representative Olson, you said your climate issue. I would say it's our climate issue. And this is a bill that, in raising the fees, that was brought by Representative Zalesnikar, and I thought I could find a way for us to work in a bipartisan fashion on this by addressing some of the things that she said in a way that could also be farsighted and help put some things in place to help the implementation of the greenhouse gas VMT thing. By the way, EVs range in price a lot lower than you talk about, especially if you get a used EV. I spent a lot less than you said, $50,000, $70,000, $100,000. So, and that is continuing to happen. So I think this is a excellent offer, and I hope that Representative Zalesnikar will accept it.
Roll call has been requested. Please proceed with the roll call.
Chair Koznick.
No.
Vice Chair Myers.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Berg.
Yes.
Representative Fogelman.
No.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
Yes.
Representative Joy.
No.
Representative Kraft.
Yes.
Representative Murphy. Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Ream.
Yes.
Representative Sensenmura.
Yes.
Representative Scraba.
No.
Representative Tabke.
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Zalesnikar, if you want to have some closing words, I want to get you back to your committee, and if the committee has some
Sorry, I didn't have my mic on.
Thank you.
If you want to have some closing comments, we'll get you back to your committee, and then the committee can, since we're just laying it over, we can have still have some discussion. And I think there's a testifier as well. So
thank you very much. And I agree. I don't like having any more costs either. I don't see this as really a new cost. I think it's a parity situation. We have roads and bridges to take care of. Those who drive vehicles that are not EV have an automatic gas inflator tied to them every time they pump up. So I'm paying it every time I drive down here, and I think that's what we all need to be doing, and it's time to get this. It's a $62 increase for people that have EV vehicles. That's it on an annual basis. I think considering what we're asking, it's reasonable, and it will bring in probably $3 million from straight math dollars for roads and bridges. So thank you for hearing the bill.
Representative Zalesnikar, I appreciate your thoughtfulness in this bill and bringing it to us. It's not as simple as most would say, so for not being on the Transportation Committee, I appreciate your thoughtfulness. We'll excuse you back to your committee. We'll lay it over. If we'll entertain any other member discussion, if there is any. I'll just say I anticipate that we'll have more discussion on this. I know that there's seems to be some shared interest in making sure that the fees are equitable to internal combustion engines, and we'll work on that a little bit more. But for now, without seeing any further discussion, House File 189 is laid over. Oh, I'm sorry. Before we do that, I didn't realize there is a testifier, Mr. Haig. We'll unlay it over, and then we'll lay it over. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives, and committee members. My name is Nick Haig, and I will be testifying today on behalf of Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization with over 25 years of experience developing practical clean energy policies that benefit all Minnesotans. We are testifying today in opposition to House File 189. According to the Minnesota Department of Transportation's November 2024 report on options to address the highway user tax distribution funding gap, electric vehicles already contribute sufficient tax revenue through higher sales tax and tab fees to offset the lost gasoline tax revenues from internal combustion engine vehicles they replace. More funding for roadways is needed, but the funding gap we see today is caused by inflation, aging infrastructure, growing transportation needs, and the increased fuel efficiency of gasoline vehicles, not EVs. EVs only account for about 1% of on-road vehicles in Minnesota, subsequently increasing the annual electric vehicle registration fee to $150 would only contribute an additional $3.1 million annually. And this would not address any of the underlying causes of the billions required for roadway funding in coming years. Instead, the increased fee will simply create another financial hurdle to electric vehicle adoption. Since electric vehicles provide many benefits to Minnesotans, including cheaper lifetime operating costs and cleaner air, and these drivers are already paying their fair share, Fresh Energy opposes the statutory changes proposed in House File 189. Fresh Energy believes in a comprehensive roadway funding policy in which users pay their share of the actual costs imposed upon the system, regardless of what fuel they use. We also believe that there is a role for raising transportation revenues to help us achieve a cleaner and healthier Minnesota, but increasing EV registration fees is not the solution. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Haig. I still don't see any other committee comments, but I would point out that there are a number of letters in support of the bill and the general concept in your packet, members. Next, we will continue with House File 303, Representative Bernie Perryman. I will move House File 303 to be laid over. Representative Perryman, please welcome to the committee. Your bill has been moved to be laid over. Please introduce your bill and any testifiers that you have with you.
Thank you, Chair, and the committee for allowing me to present my bill today, 303. HF 303 takes the existing language that is in statute today that allows bus drivers to get third-party testing. And what this bill will do will add transit operators to it. Very simple, very basic, adding another industry.
Thank you very much, Representative Perryman. Ryan Daniel, is that testifier with you? Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Ryan Daniel, CEO, St. Cloud Metro Bus, President of the Minnesota Public Transit Association. Thank you, Chair Kosnick, for the opportunity to testify in support of HF 303, which would enable transit agencies in Greater Minnesota to conduct third-party commercial driver license, CDL testing, for their employees, similar to the model used by school bus companies. As the CEO of St. Cloud Metro Bus and President of the Minnesota Public Transit Association, I can attest to the significant challenges transit agencies face in efficiently recruiting and onboarding bus operators. One of the primary obstacles we encounter is the prolonged wait times for CDL testing through the current state system, which hinders our ability to place qualified drivers on the road. Currently, the average wait time for CDL tests in Minnesota ranges from 6 to 8 weeks, and in some instances, it can extend beyond 10 weeks. This delay is compounded by the fact that if a bus operator fails the test, they may face an additional 6 to 8 week wait for a retest. Unfortunately, this extended timeline often leads to qualified candidates seeking employment opportunities elsewhere, which makes our staffing challenges even worse. As a result, many transit agencies across the state are experiencing route reductions, which directly impacts thousands of riders who rely on public transit daily. I also want to highlight that St. Cloud Metro Bus Board Chair Dave Kleiss supports this bill. His endorsement reflects the broader consensus within our leadership that House File 303 is vital for enhancing our operational efficiency and service reliability. House File 303 presents a programmatic solution that will benefit both transit agencies and the communities we serve. By allowing third-party testing within transit systems, we can streamline the hiring process and reduce unnecessary delays, ensuring that we have sufficient operators to meet our growing service demands. The school bus industry has successfully implemented third-party testing, and it's time for transit agencies to have access to similar resources to address our workforce needs. In closing, I urge your support for House File 303. This bill represents a critical step toward improving the efficiency and reliability of public transit in Greater Minnesota. Thank you for your time and consideration. And if I may, I do have another testifier that I'd like to read, if I may.
Chair?
You want to read a letter from another testifier?
Correct.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Please introduce whoever the writer of the other letter and then proceed.
Thank you. Kurt Couture is a transit manager for Cedar Valley Services in Austin, Minnesota, known as Smart Transit. Smart has been experiencing challenges with new staff obtaining a CDL due to extended wait times for testing. We currently have staff attempting to schedule new hires at all hours of the day to try to get them on schedule and are almost always having to travel an hour plus to complete the pre-trip road exam. This often adds weeks to the onboarding process before staff can be in the seat of the bus servicing the citizens of our communities. And when already dealing with staffing challenges, this makes keeping the buses on the road even more difficult. Having a third-party testing system that is similar to school bus entities where agencies can test outside of their own will help make sure we can get our new hires trained and tested and on the road, helping the people that need to get to medical appointments, work, school, and everything in between. In our small transit systems, being down the driver can have a significant impact on our community. SMART currently has suspended service in Waseca due to staffing and prolonging the license of new hires will force us to keep that service off the road until we could get them licensed. And currently, we have two new hires that have not yet been tested. Thank you for your consideration and support.
Thank you, Mr. Daniel. I'm just curious, as a St. Cloud State graduate, does the Husky shuttle, is that under your operations?
Yes.
Great. I rode it many, many times to get to class.
Good thing.
Thank you for riding the bus.
And usually on time.
Yes.
We have Representative Cagle, and let Mr. Marble know if you have any other comments to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just kind of the bill in general. You know, we've kind of seen this trend of privatizing public government, public services, and you know, this kind of goes hand in hand with the next bill, is that we really want to start funding our government in order to get these things done. And so I would just, instead of you know, allowing these private entities to skim off the top of taxpayers, I would hope that we are able to put some of this back into DVS so that we're able to actually get the testers out there. And so I don't think privatization is the right answer. And you know, I think that's where we're seeing a lot of this waste, fraud, and abuse, is because we're farming out this stuff to private entities instead of the entities that are accountable to us. And so I would really encourage that we stop farming this stuff out to private organizations that are making profit off of taxpayer money, and that we just fund government. So that's just my say. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lead Cagle. Any comments back?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I would just go back to that. Currently, we do allow school bus companies and some private carriers to conduct third-party CDL testing now. And my approach to that is, if we can trust our school bus drivers to be tested by a third party and they're carrying our kids, how come we cannot support a third-party testing for transit? That would be my take on it. The Minnesota Public Transit Association fully supports the bill. Transit providers across the state back this bill as a practical solution to workforce shortages. We have support from the transit industry. So all this coming together, I believe it would ensure a steady pipeline of drivers that supports the long-term stability of transit agencies and the efficiency without compromising safety or quality by having this third tester for transit drivers at this point.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. I appreciate the comments of Lead Cagle. I see this almost more as a workforce issue, so that we can get our drivers utilizing our transit system more efficiently than the current mode. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say just about the exact same thing that you just stated. There is, in fact, no cost to this piece of legislation. And on top of that, I think it's pretty safe to say that the government has never been able to do anything cheaper than the private sector has been able to do. So if we're talking about costs and saving and efficiencies, as Rep. Perryman has said, the capitalistic society that we live in, the private sector has always been able to do things better than we have been able to do. And unleashing the potential of our transit drivers to really get those buses moving, maybe that's what we need to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And again, we're going to lay this over. Representative Perryman, I know that you have a number of bills up in your committee. Do you have any closing comments?
Yes, I think it's a good bill. It puts the positioning into private business. And as I'll go back to that, we trust in our school bus drivers to be tested by third parties now. So trusting them with our children, why wouldn't we trust a third party tester for transit going forward? So it'll increase transit service, and it'll be applicable to all communities and everyone in a community needing transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Perryman, for bringing this bill forward. We'll lay it over. Going a little out of normal sync, if there's any members of the public that are wishing to testify. The bill is now laid over.
Thank you, Chair and Committee.
And moving along here, we have House File 185. Representative Cagle is the author. A number of other committee members on the bill. Appreciate bringing the bill forward and looking forward to a good discussion on something very critical to building roads and our infrastructure. So, Representative Cagle, I will have to move the bill for you. We're going to lay it over, but House File 185 is will be laid over for the committee. But please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 185 is the upscoping bill, I like to call it. People have been working, or I've been working a lot on trying to, you know, build efficiencies into our system when it comes to actually the building of it. And so what this bill would do is really just allow some of our folks to get the pavement down. And so that is just kind of the bill, and I will turn it over to Dan LeBeau from the Concrete Paving Association to more fully describe the legislation.
Right. Mr. DeBeau, welcome to the committee. Please restate your name and organization and then proceed with your testimony for the record.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dan LeBeau, and I'm the Executive Director of the Concrete Paving Association of Minnesota, which represents the contractors and material suppliers that produce the vast majority of concrete pavements in our state. Thank you for allowing me to testify at today's hearing. I'm here in strong support of House File 185 regarding the Resilient Paving Program. This Resilient Paving Program will easily double the cost effectiveness of selected road projects by utilizing a simple design change to dramatically increase the pavement life. This design change involves simply increasing the pavement thickness on selected projects, which will only add a few percent to the overall cost of a road project, while more than doubling the pavement design life. This Resilient Pavement Program funding can empower MnDOT decision makers to get more bang for their buck by adding a new tool to their traditional mix of fixes approach. I'll outline a good example for MnDOT's own life cycle cost analysis data. Construction on State Highway 5 in Carver County, which is southwest of the Twin Cities near the Minnesota Landscaping Arboretum, is estimated to cost $115 million for the total project cost. Pavement is only $8.4 million of this total, and the design chosen would last 20 years. However, the cost upgrade to a 50-year design would only be $8.9 million. By adding this extra $500,000, or 0.04%, to the total project cost, we could have more than doubled the cost effectiveness. The funding provided under House File 185 would fund this $500,000 funding gap in this example. I'll also point out a couple of the key provisions included in this bill. Funds may only be used to purchase pavement. Funds cannot be used for staff or overhead costs, as the project was already programmed to be designed. This is because that changing the pavement thickness does not fundamentally change the level of effort to design and construct a road. And two, two-thirds of the program funds must be used outside of MnDOT's metropolitan district. This targeted spending will go to greater Minnesota roadways where lane miles demand it. This longer-term approach to road construction would be more responsible for MnDOT's yearly pavement budget of over $250 million to maintain approximately 14,500 miles of roadway. Long-life fixes are frequently the best way to minimize negative impacts to both the taxpayers and the environment. Concrete is the most cost-effective pavement to achieve these long-life designs and can easily last 50-plus years, as demonstrated by numerous such examples throughout Minnesota. MnDOT has a long to-do list, their STIP and the CHIP, and with a change in focus, we can reduce the number of future projects by building roads that last longer from the start. We need to upgrade the right types of projects with small strategic investment. We've also found that drivers enjoy less frequent road construction as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I stand ready for any questions.
Thank you for the testimony. Next we have, if he's here, Mr. David White. Oh, he is. I was looking around and didn't see him before, so thought maybe the cold kept him away. I will disclose Mr. White invited me to tour his business last Friday in the snowstorm. It happens to be located in my district. I had no idea that he was located in the work he was doing in the industrial park, but I think he adds, look forward to your testimony to add some context to this whole discussion on how we can build more resilient roads. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick and the committee. My name is David White. I'm a civil engineer. My background is serving state agencies with consulting for pavement foundation systems. I'm not here representing an agency, just as a civil engineer resident in Minnesota.
And Mr. White, if you could just state the business that you're in for the record, just
I'm
for clarity.
The CEO for a company called Ingios. As a civil engineer that works in pavement foundation systems, I've had the opportunity to travel across the country and do work in 25 different states in the capacity of pavement foundation assessment. I've had the opportunity to travel the world and work as part of a military operation almost 20 years ago that looked at using advanced technology on foundation systems. And what I want to share with you today is that the leading cause of premature pavement issues is the foundation. It's inadequate pavement foundation support. 1 in 5 miles in the United States fail prematurely because of the pavement foundation system. It's exciting to hear about the initiative to move forward with resilient pavements and the initiative to extend pavement life. That's critically important and something at a national level we're seeing is taking place. What I would encourage the committee to do as part of that process is to consider the foundation as one of the key elements as part of a long life resilient pavement system. In terms of the return on investment, what we're seeing is that small investments in improving that foundation can have disproportionate effects on improving the overall cost effectiveness of pavement systems. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. I don't know if the committee has any questions. Mr. White, I'll ask a question. Can you explain the sub-foundation? In what manners can we improve how we can get better sub-foundations?
Yes, thank you for the question. There's really sort of two issues with foundations. One is more technical in nature, the other is more specification training. The technical issue is that pavement foundations are the most variable component of a pavement system. They're the least tested component of the pavement foundation, and the specifications have the least rigor in terms of verification of any component in the pavement foundation system. So there's technical issues that need to be improved. And that will be manifest through changes in specifications, increasing the quality of testing, the frequency of testing, and ensuring that the tests that are performed do validate that that foundation system is going to adequately support that pavement for long life.
Thank you for that explanation. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much. This is more comment. I don't necessarily need to have any answers on this, but just want to say first, thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill. I think this is really important that we talk about these issues and as they move forward. And thank you, Representative Cagle, Lee Cagle, for bringing this bill forward. And one thing I think this really highlights, and we need to make sure as a committee to recognize, is that budgets matter, and that making sure that we have adequate funding for projects really, really matters, because this takes and we have the money available right now to really do projects in the, I don't use air quotes, but the right kind of way to make sure that we are not just doing things as cheaply as we possibly can today, but that we have the money available to do these so that over decades that Minnesota is able to save money in times of doing it. So like I used to be the mayor of Shakopee, and the mayor as city of Shakopee, we put more money into projects. So just in this same manner so that we can get an extra 5 to 10 years out of the roads, which over decades and over generations, it saves millions of dollars for taxpayers. And so just making sure that we don't do things that blow massive holes in the budget and make sure that we do things that are able to afford upgrades like this so that we are able to get projects done in the right way so that we're able to save money for Minnesotans over time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tabke, and I think your comments are
I agree with a lot of them that, you know, we're not engineers, so we don't understand a lot of this stuff, but I appreciate those that have helped us understand it. But it is our job as committee members to better understand as much as we can. So I appreciate the testimony of both the testifiers and the author. And I do want to point out within the bill, there is a dollar amount in here that's just kind of a marker. You know, as I can quote Chair Davids, we're not counting the dollars at this point. But we know that there is a funding gap, maintenance gap in our road system, and we talk about that later. But what this bill, I think, does well is to try to minimize the maintenance on our roads to make our dollars last longer. So I appreciate Representative Tabke's comments on that. I know MnDOT is here in the audience. I don't know if they have any position on setting up an account like this and how we can better make sure that the roads meet the specifications and the life expectancy that taxpayers deserve. And then Representative Anderson also has a question, and Representative Berg as well. Mr. Rudine, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record, and we'd love to hear what the MnDOT's comments and ideas are as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And I'll start by just thanking the concrete industry. We met with Mr. LeBeau, and they took some of our suggestions when they were drafting this language. I think one of the changes was on, it's on line 2.2, the design life. I think originally they were at 70 years, if I recall correctly. And we suggested that was maybe a little too long, and suggested 50 years, so they incorporated that. And also, you know, I appreciate seeing that this would be new funding coming into the system. You know, it's always a balancing act for us. We could build pavements to last 100 years if we wanted, but that would be very, very expensive, and then other roadways on our system would deteriorate. So. Trying to find that right balance, but having some additional resources so we can upscope some of these projects. Upscoping is also a way to spend money fairly quickly. So I think Mr. LeBeau mentioned, you know, you don't have to do a whole lot of re-engineering if you want to upscope a project for pavement thickness. That's something that we can take an existing project and get it out the door relatively quickly by just you know, adding an additional inch of concrete, for example, or half inch of concrete.
Thank you, Mr. Rudine. Representative Anderson, and if you just stay close by, you may have some more questions if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah, I think so.
I think the questions are closer than we thought.
Yeah. Thank you, and or maybe to the engineer. I actually have several kind of questions all related. The civil engineer, right? Was talked earlier about really the specs of the project, not just the overlay, not just the extra concrete on the top, but the whole base and how the base. So those are two different things, I think. And I think it's important to understand because it we have new construction projects and then we have reconstruction projects. And I've got to believe that this dollar is probably looked at for new construction, maybe not. But if you're going to reconstruct something, you're going to have to dig up the entire, you know, maybe you do anyway, but you're going to be digging out the you know, the bottom and potentially making that thicker or more, whatever. And so I guess I'd like to ask you to just expound on that a little bit. And also just the whole issue of specs, because this is one great idea potentially to set the dollars aside, but we could also look at just increasing the specs for new construction in the first place and not going through this process. But I don't know the dollar figures difference in that either. You know, you'll hear a little bit of talk about, well, it's a certain tiny little part of a new full new project. Of course, it's bigger than, you know, when you're just looking at the road bed. Okay, it's a much higher percentage, but what is it generally overall? What kind of dollars are we actually talking about to bring something from a 30-year road to a 50-year road? And So there's lots of questions in here, but I think you're probably the experts.
Representative Anderson, you direct the question about the dollars to which testifier?
Whichever one wants to answer. So I think there's a variety of...
Yeah, or actually, if you don't mind, I'll take the liberty of...
There we go.
Actually, each of you, if you could talk about, you know, we've got the sub-base, and then we've got adding on top of it, mm-hmm. then we've got MnDOT. If you could talk about what kind of extra dollars, in terms of percentage or something, on a project, are we looking at spending if we want to increase the resiliency of the roads? We'll start with Mr. White.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much for the question. The, you know, from an engineering standpoint, the ideal pavement system is one that has an adequate foundation and proper thickness of the pavement to last a long time. What my experience has been, where we focus on high-quality pavement foundations and verifying them before the pavement goes down, is that it typically costs an additional roughly 1% of project cost to go through that and make sure you've got a really good, robust, long-lasting foundation.
Okay, appreciate that, Mr. White. Mr. Labo, I think you kind of had mentioned it in your earlier comments, but if you could restate it, and then we'll go to Mr. Radin about what his thoughts are.
Yeah, to hopefully answer that question in terms of cost, of course, you're kind of lucked out. You've got two registered civil engineers in Minnesota here answering questions. So having run those numbers, of course, I'm going to be a bad engineer and say it depends. But with the Highway 5 project, for example, I mean, that one you're looking at about 1%, you know, less than 1% of the total cost. A project that we actually upscoped in Wright County on Wright County Highway 35, that project we estimated to be around 2%. And Anoka County, they did the same thing to upscope from a 35-year design in their example to a 75-year-plus design. That cost about 3% of the total project cost. So generally speaking, on most of these projects, you know, the actual cost of the pavement itself is not a lot. The actual cost of the gravel is not as much. You have a lot of costs for mobilization, traffic control, getting people out there. You have all the... I was a former MnDOT resident engineer, so I was responsible for all the road construction projects out of the St. Cloud district. And with that is, you know, we had our inspection staff making sure that we built good quality foundations for everything we did. And that is important. But then also, it just really kind of depends on the scenario. Is, you know, we can probably look at, you know, some of the more mill and overlay preservation type projects. It wouldn't quite go as far on the money wise, but it's still going to be a substantial cost effective provision. And I should just add too, is there is a cost effective provision in this bill that specifically says it needs to meet these criteria for cost effectiveness. Otherwise, it is not eligible for funds. So hopefully that answers the question.
Thank you for pointing that out. Mr. Radin, could you address the specifications questions of Representative Anderson? Would it be easier just to change the specifications from the get-go instead of setting up a separate account and looking for funding that way?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. You know, I think the concern about doing that would be that then you'd have to do it on every project potentially. And, you know, if that's the direction we want to head, we can certainly do that. But then, you know, you'd be looking at a significant permanent ongoing increase needed for pavements. And so if I understand your question correctly, maybe I'm not quite following the question.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, so that's what I'm trying to get at. Okay, so you say it's 2%, 3%, 5%. You say it's significant. So what is the additional cost to go from a 35-year road to a 70 or whatever numbers we're talking about, or 35 to a 50, and in new construction versus reconstruction, which I've got to assume that that's going to be more as a percent on reconstruction because you're digging out the base probably. So that's what I'm trying to find out. Thank you.
Mr. Radin?
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll maybe say that I am not an engineer, so I'm not sure I can give you a solid answer today, but I can check with our Office of Materials and try to get some some better information on that. Again, I think our folks feel pretty strongly that deciding which kind of pavement to use, which kind of base to use on every project is a little different, because sometimes it makes sense to go in and tear the old base out and start from scratch. Other times, it may not be appropriate to do that for whatever reason. So if you have a swampy area near the highway, and the pavement is, buckling because of wet subsoils, then that's maybe a location where you'd want to go in and pull out all that existing base and kind of start over. But other locations, it just may not be feasible. And as I said earlier, we're trying to always balance these things around the state. Each district really makes its own decisions about projects, and then those come to, in the case of pavements, comes to the materials office to sort of concur with those decisions. So, changing a spec would take away maybe some of that flexibility that exists today.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin, and we can maybe follow up a little bit more from the department, but the point that you just made about each district makes its own decisions, I would think there would be more uniformity across the whole state on how we build our roads, but maybe for the sake of time, we'll let that fly for right now. Representative Berg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question, I think, might either be for Representative Cagle or possibly Mr. LeBeau. Last biennium, we passed the Buy Clean bill in Chair Cagle's infrastructure, a sustainable infrastructure committee. I don't know if you're part of the study that came out of that bill or not, but as I'm looking at this, and we're talking about upscoping so that things last maybe 50 years or more, are we factoring in using sustainable materials as an important part of the life cycle of the pavement?
Representative Cagle?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would hope so, but I might want to pass that one over to Mr. LeBeau.
Mr. LeBeau?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to answer that question, the best way is fundamentally the most sustainable project is something, I go back to the 80s, the old reduce, reuse, recycle. Is one of the perks of building a 50-year pavement is you're actually reducing the amount of material, labor, effort, fossil fuels that go into generating it. So, like, for example, let's say, on the Highway 5 example I shared, is for that small amount extra, we can more than double the life of the pavement. Well, that also means, for a 10% increase, you'd say in terms of CO2 for environmental impacts, it's going to last twice as long. So if you figure out those environmental impacts over the life, it's actually a substantial reduction as well.
Thank you. You're good. And we do have another bill I want to start in about 5 minutes and then wrap that up. Representative Murphy, then Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, first of all, for Mr. LeBeau. So you mentioned the Highway 5 project, and it's estimated a 50-year. What would that project have cost if you were to stretch it to 70?
Mr. LeBeau?
It would depend on the pavement type. Asphalt and concrete would be a little bit different, but for a concrete project to amend it to 70 functionally, I would dare say a lot of the MnDOT designs, they round to the nearest half inch. And so when you actually take that rounding, it typically will, the actual design life, you may calculate it, let's say at 7.2 inches. By rounding it to 7.5 to achieve 50 years, may also achieve 70 or more. I know one recent district project, they did a 20-year design, and the effect of rounding, I ran it in MnDOT's design software, it actually had a 192-year design life. So the impacts of rounding is significant as well. And a lot of times there, it may be zero, and other times it may be, half a percent. It's very little.
Mr. Chair.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Murphy, Representative Murphy.
Thank you. So in the right conditions, that adding that little bit extra can easily adapt to the next life, the length of the road. So those are great decisions for you guys to be making. I have one more question for Mr. White. So studying the effects of the base, have you looked at any of the other options? I know in Otterfield County, we've had a project that uses incinerator ash as a way to strengthen Class 5. Have you looked at anything other that we can actually make that sub base stronger or more pliable, whatever we need it to do?
Mr. White?
Yeah, thank you for the question. We've looked at probably 50 different foundation materials, and some of the best materials are materials that are local, as long as they go through a rigorous process to demonstrate they're going to meet the engineering requirements. Those can be definitely feasible materials for long life pavements.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. Representative Olson, then Ms. Representative Jones, and then we will move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question was for Mr. Rudin, and I think he walked out of the room. Oh, no, he's hiding behind the pillar. Look at that. Perfect. Thanks for sticking around. So my question is, do you know the exact percentage that is allocated for each MnDOT project that would be for cosmetic purposes? Because if, in fact, we're talking about a 0.4% increase in the cost of a project for the purpose of adding 30 years onto its total life design, if the cosmetic threshold is higher than that, why do we need to look at a really nice piece of sidewalk for 20 years when we could look at a really nice road for 50 years?
Mr. Rudin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, I don't think there's a specific percentage for each project, so a Millen overlay could have zero, but you know, an urban reconstruction going through a historic downtown, it could be a couple percent potentially, depending on the project. There's also kind of a cap that MnDOT has for contributing, and then if a local government wants to do those really fancy benches or lighting, for example, then that would be their cost. So still a cost to the project, but it wouldn't be MnDOT funds.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't waste any more time. Can the department get me those fundamental numbers on how that's all decided? Thank you.
Sure. Then finally, Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just had some questions, one question around the cost-effectiveness ratio. I'm really excited to see this kind of safeguard to this. I think, you know, we've been talking a lot about cost, and I think this provides a really important safeguard around that to be able to make sure that we're getting the benefit for the slight additional cost. And so I'm wondering if you could just explain it a little bit so that the committee understands it.
Is that to Mr. Rudin or Mr. LeBeau?
I think to LeBeau.
Mr. LeBeau?
Yes, thank you, Representative. The cost effectiveness, as you said, is kind of a guardrail. It's kind of, call it the reasonableness, is we don't necessarily want to go upscope a project that, you know, like we have a bad foundation on, for example. You know, and we see that around the state where we have settlement or different types of issues. So what we really want to target is the places where we can really extend this money as far as possible. That's, in my mind, the priority of the bill. We don't want to, you know, like the Highway 5 example, if you figure out the cost effectiveness, it well exceeds the thresholds in the project. But if you go calculated, you know, the threshold to go run those costs on another type project, it may not make sense. So really what we want to do is focus on the national highway system first, because that's kind of the artery of our system, you know, strengthen that. So then when we have future road construction projects, those roads can actually take that diverted traffic in the future. So that's part of the system behind that. But then, you know, fundamentally is the cost effectiveness. Fundamentally, we just don't have the money to, you know, maintain the system under the current status quo. I know Eric can probably speak to this too, but I think a recent MnDOT report said MnDOT needs about $890 million a year to go maintain the STIP to the level of performance that are needed. And I really think by, you know, running the numbers is when we actually go in, add a new tool to MnDOT's arsenal, which is kind of the 50-year plus fix, is that'll help drive down that number. And then, you know, again, we just want to make sure, you know, to your core point, is we're targeting the most viable options to do.
Thank you. Representative Cagle, appreciate bringing this bill forward and authoring it. I think obviously it's an important, one of the most important things that I think we can do is we're charged with the Transportation Committee of building our roads and making sure that we get the best return on our investment. So I appreciate the testifiers and your perspectives, and hopefully this is something we'll take a little bit more serious look at as session progresses. But to Representative Cagle, to wrap it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's exactly the point I was going to raise, is that return on investment really is what we're looking at. And if we can spend a little bit more upfront in our capital, then we're going to lower the cost of the maintenance on our roads. And I think that's really, you know, what we need to look at. Not only do we need to look at the foundation, but then the pavement. You know, when you go in to look at a house, you're looking at the roof, you know, and the foundation. And so those are the two things that I think are really important. And if we can try to extend the life of those arterial roads and really just focus on the biggest bang for our buck. It might cost a little bit more up front, but making those investments up front will save us long term in the back end. And so that's really what you know, this bill aims to do. So I really appreciate the time. And yeah, I hope we can do some good work on this going forward.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. House File 185 is held over. Next, we will move on to House File 305, Representative Joy. Thank you to our testifiers. Appreciate your time today. Representative Joy, you can move your bill to be laid over within the committee and then introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this bill has taken the new blackout plates that came out in 24 and removing the money from the driver's vehicle safety operating account to the highway user tax distribution fund.
Thank you for that introduction. I don't know if we have any member questions before that, but we do have an amendment. And there is a testifier. We'll take the testifier first. Director Zhang.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome to the committee again, and I'm not sure if we had you testify yet this year. Kind of moved through rather quickly on agency day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I have not had the pleasure yet. Really happy to be here.
Yeah. Introduce yourself for the committee and then also for the record. Give you some leeway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. A pleasure to be here. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. I'm here to express serious concerns with House File 305. We've also submitted a letter outlining the DVS concerns, but I want to take this opportunity to highlight just a few of those. In recent years, the legislature has appropriated additional funding to support DVS operations in the areas of exam and vehicle inspections. That additional funding, along with creative solutions and improved efficiencies, has resulted in thousands of available appointments in the next 30 days throughout Minnesota, including the metro area. As a special revenue-funded division, DVS relies on appropriations from the Driver and Vehicle Services Operating Account to support all of its statutorily required services to Minnesotans. DVS has an obligation to ensure that the fees it collects are adequate to maintain the health of the account. The blackout special pay revenue is a voluntary contribution fee paid by customers and represents a creative revenue source that does not require increased fees on all Minnesotans. Transferring the blackout special plate to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund will result in an increase of 0.25% of the $6.3 billion in tax revenues forecast to be collected into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund over the biennium. DVS understands and acknowledges the importance of the HUTD fund and the services it supports, but diverting the blackout plate revenue will have a very small impact on the HUTD while causing the DVSOA to run a deficit. Thank you for your time, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Director Zhang. We have an A1 amendment. Representative Olson, Representative Ream, is that your amendment?
Yes.
Okay. We'll go to Representative Olson first, and then we'll take up the amendment.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the director here. You'd mentioned how if we take the money that this is kind of a golden goose that came into your lap, and you didn't even realize that this was going to be as successful as it was. So my question to you is: we regularly talk about how if you take that away, it's going to raise fees. Is if we leave it, will it decrease fees?
Representative Director Zhang.
Mr. Chair, Rep. Olson, the fund right now, or the estimated impact of this is about $8 million a year. by removing this $8 million per year of revenue that's coming to this account, that will reduce the amount available to be appropriated at the levels that the division has been appropriated by the legislature historically. That would mean that we would have to somehow, or there would just be not the same amount of money remaining to operate services. It wouldn't impact, this bill doesn't impact fee structuring. It just impacts the amount of revenue that's in the account.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this was a plate that we had no idea was going to be as successful as it was. That's why all the money went to you. And I don't even believe you were expecting that this was going to be that case, this valuable of an asset to you. And so I think that just by arbitrarily saying, well, you know, if you're taking this away, we're going to have to increase fees. Well, you weren't planning on it anyways. This is a huge amount of money that I don't think anyone in your department was looking at it saying we're going to increase costs by $8 million a year. I think that there's a little bit of making, you know, making things out of what they weren't originally. So thank you, Mr. Chair. There's no real question there. So let's move on, if you will.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Zhang, I know last year we had you come in and show us the backlog of the driver's testing and our staffing compared to other states. Have we been able to catch up on the backlog of driver's testing and bring our staff up to comparable states as far as where we are in Minnesota?
I might be jumping ahead to the discussion with the amendment, but go ahead and answer the question, Director, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, we have hired the 30 staff. Well, we did hire. We were waiting on one. We had to repost, and that did finally come through. We have hired all 30 staff that were appropriated by the legislature last year. That funding came in July. It took us a little bit of time. We'll have them trained up here in the next couple months, and they should be operating on in our exam stations throughout the state in the next couple months here. We have done some creative things around the state to increase our bandwidth, and so between the additional staffing and some of those creative solutions, we're really happy to share that we have over 7,000 appointments as of last Friday available throughout the state over the next 30 days. I think we're working even harder to try to figure out how we can make that available within 14 days, and that'll be a continued work in progress for us.
I have a question before we get to the amendment. Director, is this plate, the fees associated with the blackout plates, different than a lot of the other plates? There's an annual fee that's not associated with other plates. Is that correct understanding, or am I misunderstood?
Mr. Chair, every special plate has a contribution fee. The standard Minnesota white and blue plate that you see across the state, are certainly our most popular plate, doesn't have any additional contribution required. Every specialty plate, so anything that's not the white and blue plate, will have a contribution fee. Contribution fees are set in statute. Most plates are $30. Some have some variation, depending on the plate. But most plates settle for about $30 contribution fee.
So to clarify, the $30 fee on the blackout plates is similar to a lot of the other specialty plates?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Thank you. Representative Cagle, did you have another follow-up, or do you want to move to the amendment first?
I just wanted to thank you, Mr.
Chair.
And I just wanted to note that, you know, those are voluntary fees that we're adding. You know, you have to request the specialty plates. So this is something that it's an extra fee that people are requesting. It's not something that's mandated on them. And so I think that's a really important point, that these are voluntary fees that people are putting on them. And I remember Representative Igo was one of the first people to get one of those plates. So when I saw it, he goes, oh, I'm doing my part to fund DVS. So thank you.
That it is voluntary. I will say that there's one of my most important constituents in Lakeville ordered the blackout plates, but I don't think this particular constituent is aware that there was an additional $30 fee annually on it. So we might be having that discussion later this evening. Representative Ream, please introduce your amendment, please, the A1.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick, and thank you, Representative Joy, for
technically move the amendment for the
bill
record.
Forward. Yes, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment, which you probably have before you. We've heard a lot about how it's been really difficult for people to, you know, schedule an appointment for a driver's test. I know an earlier bill that Representative Perryman had brought forward was, you know, the difficulty that we see with getting testing for CDL licenses. And so this amendment would specifically earmark the revenue from the blackout plates to be used by DVS on driver's exam staffing, exam stations, and related costs until the goals had been met. And I know we had Mr. Zhang testify in support of, you know, how those funds really need to be used for DVS. So I hope you consider this a friendly amendment. And yeah, please consider this.
Representative Ream moves the A1 amendment. Was there a question to Representative Joy? Okay, I was checking something. Any committee comments? Representative Joy?
I understand the intent for this. I think at this time, you know, this has been in law since 2024, and I'm hopefully they're doing everything and making sure everything's in balance. I think we heard he added 30 staff. I hope we're not using all the $8 million for that. That's $266,000 per staff. So I myself would say a no on this amendment.
Seeing no other committee discussion.
Can we get a roll call on that one, please?
Representative Ream requested a roll call.
Yes, thank you, Chair Kosnick. Yeah, if we could have a roll call.
A roll call will be granted. I will just reiterate Representative Joy's comments that what's in statute in terms of performance by DVS on testing standards should be met with or without the additional funds from a blackout plate. Please call the roll.
Chair Kosnick.
No.
Vice Chair Myers.
No.
Representative Anderson. Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Fogelman?
No.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Jones?
Yes.
Representative Joy? No. Representative Kraft?
Yes.
Representative Murphy?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Ream?
Yes.
Representative Sensenmura?
Yes.
Representative Scraba?
No.
Representative Tapke?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Is not adopted. So we can move on to a general committee discussion, if there is. Otherwise, seeing none, we will go to the author of the bill for final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the blackout bill, and I agree, it's a fee. You get to just pick if you want to pay it or not. You know, one of the things that does bother me, my personal self, is the blackout plates available at the motor vehicle shops all the time. I have the Club 100 plates, which was a blackout plate for first responders, and that money goes to them. But that's not available at the Department of Public Safety places when you go get your license, so you don't get that option. So I think that's why this is successful, because people want to see that. They think it's something different to have. But I guess I encourage members to vote yes to move this over to the funds we need for these trunk highways and bridges and making sure everything's safe. Thank you.
Okay, House File 305 is to be laid over. So without any further comments, we'll lay that over. House File 305, and just as a committee, just there was an incident with a Delta Airlines up in Toronto. It appears that everybody's accounted for it. I'm not sure what the incident was, but thankfully everybody's appears to be fine, so we'll keep that in our thoughts. The next Wednesday, we do not have House committees at this time for at the 1 o'clock hour, and so the following Monday we will have a committee. We did take off a bill that I had regarding the North Star that was removed from the agenda, number one, for time, although I'm pretty sure I could have gotten it done in about 15 minutes. but the Met Council, it's a paid holiday for them, so just to make it easier for their staff, we removed that from the agenda. Any other comments, Lead Cagle, or we're good? Okay, we'll see you in a week from today. Meeting is adjourned.